I did an 11th hour with
Joe
the other
day
over Skype for the first time in ages. Wow. And I had forgotten that on that one we synchronized with one of us going 3, 2, 1 and then both saying go at the same time so I can line up the goes because I was ready to do the 5. So I feel like we shouldn't adopt it now, especially since the 5 has become a thing we often leave in.
Yeah.
And at time of recording last episode, not actually out yet. Sorry about that. I don't like having one in hand, but things got on top of me.
Yeah, that happens.
Were. Yeah, and that has got a noticeable 5 at the start of it, which you won't have been reminded of personally because you won't have been able to hear it yet.
Yeah.
However, talking about uploading things to your web space, Guy, if you look in the folder that I offered...
I saw it! I need
you
to...
You will find 3 episodes of Joking Apart.
Yay!
I will put the other 3 in when I can, and I hope they're in an okay format for ya.
Awesome. It'll be great. I can't wait.
Let it bed in. It's it's not an instant
cool,
enjoyable
cool.
because of the very nature of Ting. Ting, the nature of Ting is irrepressible. and quite a minimal market joke, that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, how you been doing?
We've been talking about
iPads in a way that would annoy most people, so we won't
all
bother
good.
With
that. It's all good.
Someone said something on Facebook. Oh, it's me talking about... I'm going to be on Intro to X. I've got a Terminator podcast coming up as well.
Nice.
Episode of What We Make, a Terminator podcast. Currently knee-deep in...
Sarah Connor Chronicles.
Sarah Connor Chronicles. They'll be doing a Self-Made Man soon, which is an excellent, excellent little episode.
Very cool.
I like it a lot. I like Will a lot. He doesn't listen to this, but I like him anyway. Mm-hmm. I'll mention it. Mm-hmm. I'll just give him a shout.
Yeah, Will.
Also, because he's got a very funny name.
Will Johnson?
Especially since he used to go by Willie Johnson.
Yeah, I know.
Was the name he would use.
I know.
I think that's brilliant. If you've got a name like that, you may as well just
embrace it.
Oh, I'm sorry. It sounds less like I like Will and more that I just think his name's funny.
No, it doesn't
sound
like that at all.
Will is an excellent fellow.
He is.
However,
I spent some time with him in Las Vegas a couple of years ago, and he misplaced his phone about 3 times. And then every time he or someone else found it, it was great. Will is a lot of fun. Will is great. We had a really wonderful time.
Nice. I've got the mic stand set up, which again means it's time for can opening. I can do it with one
hand. I'm drinking tea because it's cold finally here. Yay, autumn.
Yes.
Go
like the
fuck yourself,
as well.
Summer.
Yeah, I agree. We're very similar in that regard. If it's cold, I can put on a jumper.
Damn
if it's
right.
hot, fucking hell.
Fucking hell indeed. I will say this.
Especially in a country where we don't have aircon as a standard in buildings and homes and workplaces and vehicles.
Exactly. I will say this. I'm just watching what appears to be Sullivan and Kerr auditioning for villain status. I paused that just now. I especially enjoy autumn because the air is cool, but the ground is still warm.
Is Sullivan Kerr just hanging
it's
out
lovely.
Looking shady in suits?
They're just looking sharp, man. Looking sharp. Yeah.
So they're cool. They're Blues Brothers tribute act. Not the only time you're going to hear the Blues Brothers mentioned by me.
Oh, nice. Ba-da-ba.
Indeed. Let's.
I need to rewatch that movie. How old do my kids have to be before I introduce them to it?
In the UK, it's rated a 15, which I think is a good mark. Yeah. Well, 14, you know, with some... this thing is, it's not particularly violent. I don't think there's any nudity in it. There's some swearing.
Yeah.
But also, you know, it's anti-Nazi. It's pro-creativity and things like that. I think, actually, a young teen would just enjoy the rebellious business and like getting slapped across the knuckles with a ruler by a nun. I think I'd like it.
Cool.
So a couple of years.
Yeah, good stuff. All right, let's do this.
UK ratings are a good place to go for suggested ages because we break it down with 12, 15 and 18.
Well, that's very good actually.
12 recently became 12A in cinemas, which is essentially a PG-13 but for 12s. And that was kind of a money talks situation. All right, we're in it.
Now I'm curious why there's an A afterwards.
A for sort of advisory.
Ah, thank you.
Right. When the BBFC started in the current classification thing, there used to be X's and double X's and A's and things like that.
Yeah.
I don't quite understand what they are. But once we got the classification system they use now, we began with a U, which is universal. That's fine for everyone. PG, you know what that is. That's parental guidance. Used to think that meant you would need an adult with you to go to the cinema. Of course, it didn't mean that. Didn't know that. It meant you're like a seven-year-old. You could go to the cinema by yourself to see a PG. Fine. That was our only advisory one. And then 15. And then 18.
Yeah, that's a big jump.
Yes. Then, in 1989, Tim Burton's Batman came out.
Ah.
And it was too violent to be a PG, but wasn't deemed really bad enough to be a 15.
Yeah.
And it would lose... I think someone must have had a word, because it would have lost business had it come out as a 15.
So yeah, yeah.
Younger kids wouldn't have been able to go see it. So it came out... So they invented the 12. And it came out as a 12-rated movie. And I went to see it in 1989 when I was 12.
Nice.
I think with a friend who was 12.
Mm-hmm.
And so we celebrated the fact we could go and do that. And it was odd to be able to go and see a sort of a restricted film of that nature. And then we had 12, 15, and 18. The next big sort of watershed was Jurassic Park, which was really violent, but came out as a PG, but a PG that had very strongly wording on the poster about how it was full of gore and stuff like
that.
Yeah,
because there's people being eaten.
Yeah, and Samuel L. Jackson's arm gets ripped off and things like that. So it's not a PG. It is a PG-13, but we didn't have a rating of that nature, and it would have appealed younger than Batman did as well.
Mm-hmm.
So a 12 wouldn't have been any good. So someone had a word, and it got passed as a PG.
Hmm.
And then around about the time of the Spider-Man films, I think it may have been Spider-Man 2, Sam Raimi's Spider-Man 2, they invented 12A because Spider-Man 2 was too violent to be... In fact, yes, I'm looking at my DVDs right now, and I think it may have just been the original Sam Raimi Spider-Man, actually, that, again... It was a problem, so they turned 12 into 12A so that younger kids could go and see it, even though it was a pretty violent film.
Yeah.
Okay. And then we were stuck with that. So Dark Knight is 12A, where someone gets a pencil in the brain.
Yeah.
And things like that. You don't see it, but the implication is very unpleasant.
Oh, yes.
For instance. And you can do a lot with implied. Weirdly, though, 12A is not reflected in the video.
Oh, okay.
On the video, 12 is still 12. So, weirdly, it's kind of illegal for an 11-year-old to watch a 12 DVD at home. And for a while, they didn't have 12 at all. When Batman came out on home video, it was 15, because there wasn't a 12 for home video. A little confusing. It takes a while to catch up. And then, of course, there's 18, which speaks for itself. And then there's the lesser-used R18, which is for very specific films.
Ah.
So anyway...
Do some of them rhyme with Bemanuel?
No, those would just be 18s, because that's right. Softcore, mate. I'm talking genuine, hardcore pornography.
Really? That's
18R/R18. Some people have it differently, and the logo is... I think it's a square. All of the other circles are triangles, and it's blue, I think. It's been a while since I've seen one, believe it or not.
Hmm.
I think many of you don't believe that, but that's fine. We are here today, brothers and sisters,
to slay a dragon
whilst talking about At Last a Dragon, the Press Gang episode, series 2, episode 6.
Yes.
Broadcast Thursday, 22nd of February, 1990, directed by Bob Spears. It's good.
This is the Putting on the Ritz episode.
It is.
Fantastic.
On the Ritz. I often forget the theme music, so I'll tell you what, I'm going to play it here. I interrupted you.
No.
With the music.
That was me just reacting to the music.
Oh, I see. Sorry. I love that. I did like the episode where we had Rose basically laughing at the music. That was fun. We like you, Rose. We should get
yes,
you back
we do.
On one. Right. The back of the DVD is dry as a bone again and relies on you knowing what's going on in the series. It says, Linda is nervous about attending the cocktail party since she will be meeting lots of very important people and it may be the launch pad for her career. Also at the party is a very familiar looking Arab. There you go. And as I again remember to lunge from my phone and pull up my phone timer thing and open all of the wrong... You'd like this. I'm opening Android stuff like completely incorrectly. And I pulled good. Up for the bottom and opened up Google Now, of course, because I know that that sort of thing amuses
the,
you.
The Google... The polemics of technological platforms is something I'm leaving behind me.
Is it?
Yeah.
Good.
Well, use what you want, people.
Excellent. Well, have a think about that when you are telling us about this episode in 60 seconds. Starting, and I'm being much nicer than I usually am, starting yes, now.
Oh my gosh, we get a little bitty flashback at the beginning to when Linda and Spike first met. They're getting ready with the procrastinating and the sitting around and waiting with nothing to do. Spike has a lobster on his TV. They
yes.
shower, they get dressed. Spike shows up and looks, damn, son! And Linda needs a little help finding a jacket that doesn't clash. They have the most ridiculous tete-a-tete with nervous humor. And then we finally get to the party. We get to the party and, oh no, Linda's really nervous. She doesn't do social occasions. What are we going to do? Hey, look, there are some devil girls serving deviled eggs. Hey, there is an Arab who looks like Colin. Oh God, Colin, no. And Sullivan and Kerr look really good. There's some really good-looking extras, and Linda finally settles down after Spike gives her a pep talk, and she has a sit-down with someone who's going to be very, very helpful. Spike is worried he's never going to see her again, but he does the right thing, and he gets a kiss!
Ooh, just under 108 again. Ooh, 107.
107.
So not even, I can't even play in, like, the theme tune to Lost.
That's okay.
Which, as you may recall, went... Yeah. But, there you go. No worries.
No worries.
It's a good episode. I like it a
yeah,
lot.
Yeah, it was pretty neat, man. No newsroom at all. Very few of our regular cast members. I really like this kind of episode in general on a TV show.
Mm-hmm. It's a best dressed nightmare.
It's not a best dressed nightmare. It's fantastico.
Fair enough.
The number of random people I've written down as potential best dress.
Do they include the lady
you a hint,
my Skype
people.
Picture?
Every time I look, it laughs. I mean, it laughs. I laugh at it. Spoiler alert, people. Sullivan has the coolest bow tie.
Mm-hmm.
So there we go.
Yeah, my current Skype picture is Sullivan's glamorous new friend.
Yep.
So, Illyria.
Darn right.
If anyone walks in Illyria right now, they'll think he's having a very unusual phone conversation with a beautiful lady.
Conversation with a beautiful lady from the 80s.
just about the... filmed in the 80s. Just about. Again, this is when they were famed for hanging out on the set of Tim Burton's Batman at Pinewood. The kids. At least that is the rumour. So yeah, as you've mentioned, we get the titles full of people not in the episode. And I think this is a kind of episode that would not have happened based on the original series treatment.
No, agreed.
If I'm going to go out fully on a limb and say that if Dexter and Julia weren't fucking hot and really into each other and really amazing on screen together,
mm-hmm.
this is not an episode that would have happened.
Agreed.
Because it exists solely to give them an entire episode to bounce off each other. And I know those are the bits in every episode where I just go, oh, Spike and Linda flirt for 10 minutes, and like, I won't bother with that bit. But I like those bits. They're just impossible to write up, which meant this episode was pretty difficult as well. But yeah. So this episode is a pensive gang. We've got the tense lead-up to the big networking function. A series of cuts of Spike and Linda being nervous about their big evening. They've laid on some beautiful lighting for this. It's a gorgeous episode. It really is. They check clocks. They feed fish. They have chefs.
Oh, the feeding of the fish. I could smell the fish food from here.
Yes.
Like, if you've ever had a fish tank or what have you, and you've had that awful dehydrated flakes of food.
Tetrafin.
Yeah, it was just, oh my gosh. I could smell it. I don't appreciate that smell.
Are you sure it wasn't the lobster on Spike's TV?
It wasn't the lobster on Spike's TV.
You'll notice he's kicked that Confederate flag to the curb, man.
Yeah.
He had to think about it. Either that or he's kept up with current events.
Yeah.
Let's take that down. Now's the time. He has got a Stars and Stripes and some pennants for the New York Yankees and the Denver Broncos.
Yeah. Hey, American stereotypes. Let's put two of them right on the wall.
Indeed. There are some movement bits in this that I would normally have credited to Bob Spears, but I read the script, which I put on the Facebook group, by the way.
Yeah.
Go check it out. And they're in that. Bits like...
Cool.
Because we have some flashbacks to the first episode.
So, absolutely.
So there's a bit where Spike stands up, and like he stands up in normal time as well.
Mm-hmm.
In the past, he goes over to Linda's desk, but in the present, he goes into the shower.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a bit where Linda like walks around the end of her bed, and it cuts straight to her walking to her desk in that same direction as well. It's lovely stuff. And I have factoids already. And this was one of the things I was checking.
Because
I've known about this for a couple of years now and haven't checked it out. But these scenes from the first episode, they aren't the scenes from the first episode.
They're redone.
Nope, they're not redone either.
They're from an unaired pilot?
They are alternative cuts and alternative takes
from
the scenes that we used. And when you watch it, the performance is slightly different. The background action is different. Stephen Moffat, on the commentary, he says there was some technical reason for this that he doesn't know the answer to. And I was thinking about it. I thought, well, maybe they don't have the original rushes, but there was music on them. So they, as I checked, no, there's no music on them. And I'm slightly uncharitable, and I can only think of one reason why they might have used these. And that reason is the name Colin Nutley. Because I'm wondering if the stuff you film but doesn't get used is just sort of property of Richmond Film and Television, and therefore you don't have any kind of credit over it as a director.
Oh, I see. Yeah,
but
yeah.
But the stuff that was broadcast was definitely... This is Colin Nutley's directing work.
I get it. So then he would need some kind of credit on this episode if that were the case.
Well, he refused credit on the other ones, but he presumably he presumably got paid, and I imagine would have to get paid for use of the footage, unless it was a B-roll unused footage. And that's only a maybe, it could be done without actually chucking him any pennies. That is a guess. It's all I can go on. The other thing about it is it looks gorgeous, and it looks slightly better than the actual episode does. The lighting is much warmer in these. It's beautiful. It must have been filmed at just a slightly different time of day, because that was when they were in the actual building with a real window behind Linda as well. Lovely stuff. Anyway, Spike has got a really weird Blues Brothers poster on his wall. I don't know quite what it is. I couldn't find anything like it looking for a Blues Brothers poster. So whether it's for a Blues Brothers review, people who sing the songs of the Blues Brothers at the local town hall or what, I do not know. He's also got what looks to be a Pepsi can adapted into a pencil holder. So we're back on the Pepsi again. Linda gets vaguely annoyed by a copy of Catcher in the Rye. And then, as I say, we're back and forth throughout this and the first episode. Linda's clearly worried about something, even as she dries her hair. So she goes to the phone, calls Spike to assure him, although she has to go to the event with him, and she may not like it, but he doesn't get to kiss her goodnight.
No.
And then she puts the phone down before he can respond. He pulls an amazing face at the phone. But in the first episode, and presumably dropping the proviso about if she agrees to go out with him one night that week, Spike reminds us all that he made a definite commitment to kill the first dragon he sees.
Yep.
And the title, At Last a Dragon.
Mm-hmm.
And you think, oh, God, that's good. If you search YouTube for At Last a Dragon, by the way, you'll find this episode and a few slightly old songs performed by a two-person band called At Last a Dragon. It's a guy with a guitar and a young lady singing. But the young lady singing wears a low-cut top. So all of the comments on those videos are exactly as you imagine them to be.
Of course, because it's YouTube.
Yeah, it's a real fucking
and
shame.
And the internet is terrible.
Yeah.
Case in point, my wife yesterday worked a very interesting contract.
Oh, right.
She's a simultaneous interpreter.
Mm-hmm.
And we are in the midst of an election campaign.
Mon Dieu.
In Canada. And we had a French language debate.
All right.
Where all the candidates have a debate, but it's held at La Maison Radio Canada, and it's all in French, and they have to speak French. The questions are in French. They're answered in French. They debate in French. And for the rest of the country, who doesn't necessarily understand French very well, they had simultaneous interpreters, one per voice. And my wife was the voice of Elizabeth May, who is the Green Party leader. And so that was pretty fantastic. And interestingly enough, when you do a Twitter search for the terms translator May, you get a whole bunch of people giving their opinions on how the translator did.
Oh.
And I was very, very surprised how most of it was really great. And
one guy
was just a jerk.
Of course.
For no good reason. So, yeah.
Was it about the translation? Was it about her voice? What?
It was about the translation. But... I'll be honest, the funniest thing is that no one on Twitter commented on what my wife herself noticed, is that when she was supposed to say greenhouse gases, my wife accidentally said greenhouse grasses.
Nice.
No comments on Twitter or other social media about that. So you know what?
Yeah, fuck you guys. If you didn't spot that, that could have a meme all of its own.
Yeah, exactly.
Like Prime Minister fucking a pig.
Yeah, isn't that amazing?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of played out now, so I don't think I'll bother with that. But
nope.
It's an unusual tale of class in the UK.
Go stick your head in a pig.
Yes, it wasn't his head he stuck in a pig, to all, by all accounts.
Well, you know.
But...
from a certain point of view.
Now.
That was just me in my best Alec Guinness.
Yes.
Oh my gosh, this date has so much tension around it, so much anticipation and suspense. And the fact that Linda is calling Spike and saying, "Don't think you're going to get to kiss me goodnight," is a perfect thing.
Yes.
I think it's very representative of Linda.
I think she thinks that's the thing she's worried about. So, like, okay, I'll assuage my worry.
Exactly.
But she's actually worried about going to meet important people.
Yeah.
As becomes incredibly clear.
Very, very clear.
But yeah, Spike arrives at Linda's door looking smart.
Man, he looks good.
He wields a brolly like nobody's business.
A what?
An umbrella, sir.
That's what did you call it?
A brolly. B-R-O-L-L-Y. Brolly.
Okay. Is that the kind of umbrella you bring to San Francisco?
Or
when you have to ride the trolley?
Yes.
Ah, good.
Sure, why not? I mean, I wouldn't put a brolly up on a trolley. Unless I had to really drastically slow it down in a hurry.
Yeah.
I was like, shit, this'll do. I've got a big executive umbrella. It opens to 132 centimeters.
Wow.
But has got a crooked handle like that one. You do not realize the power within that umbrella until it is unleashed. It looks relatively normal. So there you go. There's some great barbs at the door. He's still stuck on the kissing thing. You know, I'm an excellent kisser. 17 years and I've never dribbled once. And Moffat...
yeah, the back and forth is hilarious.
Moffat finally gets some digs in at the expense of someone's appearance, which he loves to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you must practice a lot on your own. Yeah, I've got a pair of rubber lips. Well, I could see that.
I could see that.
And a couple of jokes about them both being short.
Yeah.
There's a little gnome out here you could talk to. There's a little gnome in there
I could talk to too. I'm 6'3". If he was just been standing in a hole since I was 7.
Yeah, I've often thought of you that way.
This back and forth stuff is really great. Mm-hmm. Why are her cupboards slanted?
I don't know. It's,
what
it's
the fuck is going on? I'm sorry. I was talking about something.
House. We've discussed this before.
Yeah. Who has... that just seems... I understand the shelves are level. I understand the shelves are not slanted towards you. But to have the cupboard doors slanted that way is... really? Does it improve reachability? It must improve reachability. To have the upper shelves closer to you.
Yeah, I guess so.
And the lower shelves.
Yeah.
Why don't I have slanted shelves then?
I don't know. It's a very unusual thing. It's a weird...
It looks weird.
It's a weird...
It looks crooked.
unpleasant sort of semi-clear fronted thing as well.
Mm-hmm,
it's
yeah,
kind that, of, you know, whatever this house was, that bit's left over from the 70s, almost certainly. Yeah. Lots of stuff on the side, some Kellogg's cornflakes, some bold.
Is she making more instant coffee, do you think?
She certainly, but whether she's using 3 tablespoons of coffee powder this time remains to be seen. God damn, Dexter looks fucking good.
He looks very good.
He just walked in with the flowers. I was just watching.
Yeah.
And
I'm way ahead of you. I'm at the stair covering that seems to be leopard print. Dear God.
I paid so much attention to character in this, I've got very little background detail.
Yeah.
I did notice that in his bedroom, Spike has got like an emergency light that he must have stolen from some roadworks.
Yeah.
That's a nice touch.
It's a really nice touch. Set dressers are insane.
Oh, they're really good in this.
I know, but I think just as in general, I think to be a set dresser, you're really looking at the world in a very different way. And I don't mean insane in like I'm being insensitive to people with mental issues. No. I mean just insanely particular and just fantastic, you know?
I noticed the L plate seems to have gone from Linda's fridge.
Mm-hmm. I noticed that as well. I was fixated on the switch on the wall, which was very bulbous.
But, what,
you know,
behind...
it was the 80s. Behind Spike.
Yeah, a light switch is not dissimilar to that, to be honest with
Interesting.
You.
Interesting. That's, yeah. Yeah, we have the very flat faceplates on our light switches.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, I mean, ours are flat now, but I do know places that have this. And the very tiny switch.
Mm-hmm.
In the middle. Yeah, that's... Although Spike is still sort of giving out the stuff, he's playing it slightly more nervous.
Yeah.
I don't know quite where to mention it in the thing, so I'm going to mention it here. Dexter is brilliant in this episode. He's got very tiny, excellent stuff to do. And it makes you wonder whether he would have been even better if he wasn't saddled with that accent and trying to make it work at the same time. Whether he could have just spoken in something like his normal voice and then emote with it. The fact he's able to do both is fine. Again, that accent's still totally acceptable to me in a way that it might not be to others, even if it's grown on viewers. But, oh, he's so good. But yeah, he presents her with the flowers. You can ask where I got them from, you know. Whose garden did you steal them from? Yeah, I got them from a blind old lady. She will never miss them. Should have seen me trying to blindfold a guide dog. I wonder where they both are now.
It's completely unnecessary.
Yes,
and lovely.
It is
terrible.
Well, we have the first bit of a pure Spike honesty here. She says, "Why do you have to be so totally sick?" She just says, "Self defense."
Ah, there we go.
Which is about as real as he's ever been.
Agreed.
He doesn't elaborate. He just says that. But so he continues to faff about. Linda has this realization that she makes him nervous, and whenever she makes him nervous, he just starts cracking joke after joke. That he claims that he was cracking those jokes at himself, and she was just standing in front of him. Which is also possible to believe that he might just even by himself, would just be in a whole monologue of funnies. But there you go. But they reach an uneasy accord, and she likes the flowers, things like that.
They're very nice.
Yeah. So now, while Linda's trying to reiterate how big a deal this party is, and there'll be many people there she hopes to impress, we see a selection of jackets to go with the orange dress. Now,
yeah,
when the green and purple jacket first showed up in the series and we discussed it about Joker fashion, I thought of this, because I thought of that green and purple with the orange. And it's a combination that once seen is barely forgotten and rarely forgotten and difficultly forgotten. I find it hard to forget. And so Spike pulls a disapproving face, so she changes into a light grey jacket. That one's sort of alright, but I think if it were a looser hem, like a big cardigan thing, it would work. But when she goes upstairs, it's clear that it's an actual sort of crap jacket with a sort of waistband thing. A bit rubbish. And she comes down with...
I'm surprised she doesn't just have something in black.
Well, she comes back with... We have seen a black jacket, and she has got it in one hand, and that natty grey cardigan... in the other.
Yeah.
The light grey jacket is the only one we haven't seen before, and I am briefly going to pull my USB thing out and put it back in again, because your voice is going a bit weird. Ready?
No problem. Yeah.
Whoop-a-doop-a-doop-a-doop-a-dee. How's that?
That's fantastic.
That's much better. I must have nudged it again. I'll try and keep my hands free of ting. I've got to stop saying ting. It's racially insensitive.
I'm not aware of why that would be the case.
Well, it is not racially insensitive, really. It's lingo that I shouldn't be appropriating.
I see.
But I do it because I'm so unlike the kind of person who would regularly say ting that the fact I do is supposed to be funny. But I've no idea if it is.
When you say ting, I think beer.
Yes, I know what you mean. Or tang, which is a orange drink.
Oh, no, because you're not saying tang.
No, that's true.
And ting beer is from... Ting soft drink. The Jamaican ginger beer.
Oh, no. Oh, there you go, then.
Yeah.
It means thing, or things, but ting.
Cool, I get it.
From a Jamaican patois.
Image search for ting beer is fantastic.
I'll bear that in mind for the future.
Yeah. Ooh, bright colors.
But yeah, unfortunately on my iPad, all the things are broken down into folders called ting. I've got web ting.
That's funny.
Music ting.
I see what you're doing.
And
I get it.
My productivity folder, though, is productivity-ing, which I was unnecessarily proud of. So, anyway, after all of this rotating stuff, they go back to the green and purple jacket, which I think is the one that worked the least with that orange dress. Backstage funds. Yeah. Apparently Julia hated this orange dress. She didn't like it at all. I think it works, but, you know.
She looks fine in it.
Yeah, certainly for
the time. She looks good in it. It's not like it makes her look terrible.
No, it's not a good match with that coat, though.
Yeah, because the hems are kind of the same level, so in a later scene when they're walking towards the house, it looks like she's not wearing anything under the jacket.
Yeah. I see on the commentary she says she looks like she's wearing a dome tent. That's fun. I think this is one of the few commentaries I could actually send to you because there is some spoiling coming up, but only for like 5 episodes time.
Cool.
Anyway, the pair leave, they get in a taxi. We get a restatement that it's an industry event where Linda will do some serious grovelling like she apparently did before when being interviewed by the Guardian newspaper.
That's Spike, funny.
Yeah, Spike says she laughed and smiled more times in the conversation with him than in all the time he's known her. How many times was that?
I'd say that was once?
It was twice.
Twice, ah.
Anyway, they continue with this, but the taxi driver has clearly had enough of this shit and he turns his engine on and then they get in. That's funny. It's like, nope. Then in the taxi, Linda reminds Spike she's going with him because Kenny forced her to. You know, what a lovely guy.
He's such a nice guy.
It's important to her and he shouldn't get up to any crazy stuff. I've written crazy stuff here with individual caps for the C and the S because I've seen all of Press Gang. And we've got a couple of new listeners. We'd like some feedback from you, please. Who've also seen all of Press Gang and might be familiar with the notion of Spike, Linda, and some crazy stuff. So keep an eye out for that in a few seasons.
All right, will do. A few seasons time. All right, it'll be hopefully gone from my memory.
Yeah, almost certainly. Anyway, Spike demands to know when he's done any crazy stuff. Well, there was the school dance, the 6-year social, the 5th-year social, the 4th-year social. Sarah's birthday party, Julie's birthday party, shout out for Julie. Woo!
Julie!
Kevin's birthday party, the school sports day, the staff pupil social. I don't even remember the staff pupil social.
That's part of the problem.
It sure is. That's a big problem.
They have a staff pupil social?
I have no idea what that would be. I have no idea what most of these would be because we didn't have this stuff.
I remember being at university and we would have wine and cheeses.
Ooh!
Right, we'd have a wine and cheese in like a conference room and stuff. It was a room with basically a giant marble table where we'd put box wine and cheeses and other crudité and there'd be pictures of dead they weren't dead in the pictures but now dead old white guys who were like former heads of the university and such.
You'd smear their
and
faces
it would always be. Oh no. And it would always be really awesome news whenever one of our professors would actually show up. It was quite nice. No. Oh, the anthropology department at McGill. Memories.
I see.
There's Wine and Cheese and Foucault versus Derrida.
Yeah, I was going to. Basically, those are the only two names I could have pulled out of my hat. So yeah. I'm amazed that you landed on those two.
Yeah, those were the two. I was always more of a, hey,
Bentham.
Did you go on any cool digs last summer?
I didn't go to university. This means nout to me.
It's all good.
I realize this is literal digging.
I'm talking about a literal dig.
Digs.
No, I'm talking about literal digging in the dirt in probably, Central America or Asia or something.
Or as a recent tweet about our Prime Minister, David Cameron, said, no, Mr. Cameron, we said you get to pick your own digs. So anyway, during this list of events at which Spike has played up, they've arrived at the house of newspaper magnate Cameron Campbell and have paid off the taxi driver, who seems very glad to be away from there.
Yes, as anyone would.
Spike's taken all of this in good grace. He says, Linda, I'm not going to let you down. Just for the record, you're probably the last person in the world I'd ever let down. I thought you'd have known that by now.
Are those cherry blossoms back there?
Almost certainly. I'm afraid I've got the synopsis up. I don't have the episode up.
No worries.
Those are cherry blossoms, you know, or very, very near offer.
Yeah.
It's nice. And after this lovely thing that Spike says, Linda says, well, shall we go in? And walk straight past him. On the way up the drive, the pair are shunted aside by a stretched limo. Spike realizes that driving up to the door would probably have been a sensible move.
Which is like, why are they walking? Why did they walk? I mean, just so they could chat and so we could see how annoying they were to the cab driver. But also, shout out to the boomerang-shaped cell phone antenna on the back of that limo.
Yeah.
Woo-hoo! Is that what I haven't seen one of those. Yeah, those are all cell phone antennas.
I always thought those were like crazy, slightly shit spoilers that weren't meant to do anything. But that makes
my understanding is that they were cell phone antennas disguised as really shit spoilers.
That makes a lot more sense because it is the kind of car you'd expect to have a car phone. To this day, we've got a company called Carphone Warehouse.
I know you do, because I listen to a couple of tech podcasts that are based in England, hosted by someone who lives in Birmingham, and they mention it every once in a while.
Nice. You're right. That whatever it is on the back, it's only very briefly seen. That was a masterpiece of Illyrio eye recognition.
Listen, man, I remember seeing those in my teenage years and always like, what the hell? What the fuck are those? And then someone told me, it's a cell phone antenna made to look like a spoiler.
Nice.
Yeah. Now, I don't know if this is actually the case. I never researched it, but that's what someone told me, and so that's what I'm sticking to.
Well, I guess, if it's the information you've been given, that's how knowledge works. And sometimes you do find you've been misinformed, and you have to re-educate yourself. Some people choose not to do that. Some people go, no, I was always taught this wrong thing, so I'm going to agree to believe it anyway. And that is
did you hear that the Pope is in the United States?
I heard that the Pope said...
On a completely unrelated note.
I heard that the Pope said, like, it doesn't matter, even atheists will get into heaven, which to me sounds like a threat. That sounds like, we'll get you in the end, one way or another. You're ours.
I blame Voltaire.
You do that. His cabarets, however, marvellous. I blame John Travolta, the funkier disco version. I'm afraid I can't join in conversations about Voltaire. Awesome. I have to steer it towards an area
great.
I know.
No, that's fantastic. This butler looks so annoyed.
Oh.
But he's also really into Spike's humor, though. He gets Spike.
Yeah, of the second
he immediately gets Spike, and I really appreciate that this older guy sees this young chap all, like, dressed to the nines, as they say, and understands that this young man is not a doofus.
Yeah.
It was really great. But it might also be because this is probably the first person all evening that said more than two words to him.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Everyone else has just come in and handed a coat to him.
Yeah.
I agree. Everyone else, this is just the way of things. You ring the door, the butler opens, and you walk in, and then you meet the important people.
Yeah.
So, yes, you're right. We've had a bit of a jump here, but yeah.
Sorry, all right. We can go back if you'd like.
That, Linda is very nervous. And when she's nervous, she gets a nervous hick.
All right. We have to discuss this. Two things I want to discuss. One, why not call it the hiccups? And two, Really? They had to. They felt it was necessary. They Moffat felt it was necessary to give her a physical manifestation of her anxiety, so that we would maybe what? Because we wouldn't understand how anxious she was.
No, I just
if it wasn't
he,
for it.
I just think he thought it was funny because it happened. Yeah. There are moments where like Spike realizes she's hiccuping at various points in his sentence, and mm-hmm. so he goes with
yeah,
a big moment.
This is true.
Important people, social occasion.
This is true.
But he then tries to test the waters with her by saying, "Good night, kiss, no hiccup whatsoever."
No hiccup. That's true.
She's immediately. What's that got to do with any big moments or important people? I just thought it might make a nice social occasion. There you go. It's just purely for the humor.
Yeah, got it.
And to say nervous hick instead of nervous tick.
And why isn't the American calling it a hiccup?
He does say hiccup earlier in the thing.
He does?
And then
okay, good.
He can't resist the phrase nervous hick. But that's mm-hmm. all. So, yeah. Then we have the bit with the butler. And it's great. You go, listen, I'm going to ring that doorbell at a moment or two. When I do that, could you open the door? Great. Thanks. Nice working with you. And apparently...
That was really great.
The... Because Linda's sodded off again at this point. Her first sodding off is like an attempt to say, oh, I need a walk, when they're nearly mm-hmm. at the house and just turns right round.
Yep.
Back away again. Spike's trying to be reassuring, saying she'll be fine if she relaxes. He's back to the house, you know. This is the second sodding off. And these ducks in the background, only Bob right. Spears was really into these ducks being here. And there were many a time when it was a perfectly good take. He's like, nope, the ducks weren't in the center of frame.
Yeah, well, so that's why they're gorging themselves on all the food that
yeah.
some production assistant has had to put on that lawn.
I can
this house.
Mm.
Oh my god, opulence and all that. Holy yeah. shit, who lives like this?
Yeah, I've no idea where it is.
Do people still live like this, Chris? For reals?
I don't know any of them, but there are certainly many. Many expensive places very near where I live, and even nearer where I used to live.
Hmm.
Might want to Google Bishop's Avenue at some point, and you'll go find many £8 million houses along that.
Hmm.
Almost all completely empty, owned by very rich people who don't go into them.
Yeah.
It's a travesty, is what it is. It's bad stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it is the... It's what Western society has been for a very long time. This kind of thing of, look at me!
The weird thing about this house when you get in there is you're used mm-hmm. to houses like this having a big grand entrance hall with a big grand
yeah,
staircase.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
it isn't. It's kind of a sort of a lobby and a hallway, but the staircase is like through a little sort of archway up the side,
mm-hmm.
which is interesting. Another thing to note about this scene is it was pissing down rain. Spike's got his umbrella. He doesn't use it. And the reason he doesn't use it is because rain doesn't register on film.
Exactly.
So it's impossible to know as a viewer how much it was raining. But it was lots. And they had to keep drying them off between takes because they would look soaked. And because it didn't look like it was raining on film, there was no point in Dexter having the umbrella up because it would have looked strange.
It would have.
But, yeah.
But I will say... that you can tell how much it's raining based on how wet those stones are.
Yeah, it's basically a mirror.
mm-hmm.
And then, so yeah, Linda explains she's not very good at social stuff.
No kidding.
Yeah, Spike's like, no. He says, let's just forget this thing and go somewhere else. Crucially, Spike does not take her up on this. I think even a few weeks earlier, Spike would have been, sure, let's blow this stand. And he would have taken her to a film or something, you know, so he could spend more of the evening with her. But he reminds her it's a big deal for her, and she hiccups. And he again leads her with reassurance back to the house. And there's a minor hiccup, literally, when Linda tries to escape again. Spike catches up, leads her back slightly more forcefully.
Yeah.
And this doesn't seem dickish to me, because he understands that she really wants and needs to go in there.
Exactly, yeah. This isn't, hey... come with me and leave the chess tournament. I'm going to kidnap you.
Yeah, and it's not even like, you're going to this whether you like it or not, and you're taking Spike with you. Before you say anything, shut up. I'm such
shut
a
up,
fucking
yeah.
lovely guy. I'm the greatest, all right? You understand me? Wow, that was apparently I've got that all bottled up inside there.
Yeah, good job, not Kenny.
It's all right. All you have to do is grit your teeth. And it's
just grit your teeth.
Teeth.
You're talking about, I've been frustrated for so long.
Do you know where I'm from? I'm from fucking London, mate. I've had enough of this shit. We don't.
Don't you recognize me? I've been in every Guy Ritchie film ever.
I don't think he has, but he has been in many that sort of thing. However, Dexter Fletcher has been in a Guy Ritchie film. Dexter Fletcher is in Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels.
He is.
With his regular voice.
Yeah.
Have you encountered Dexter's regular voice since watching this? Because it's really weird.
It is weird. It's fantastic. The Germans?
What? He's not German. Well,
I know, but if I remember the scene correctly, he's asked why he has a gun. Is it to protect himself from the Germans?
Oh, I see. I think that sounds like Snatch rather than...
Oh, sorry.
Two Smoking Barrels.
He's in Snatch, though. No, is he not?
I don't believe so.
Oh,
those two films are almost identical, except
almost
one,
identical.
One is very good and funny, and the other one is really overrated.
Mm-hmm.
I like Snatch. I think it's great, is what I'm saying. It's got Alan Ford in as Bricktop. Let's not talk about Snatch.
Yeah.
Let's talk about this.
No, because we're going to get... Yeah.
So, yeah, Spike rings the bell, and the butler appears. Oh, you've worked that door before, haven't you?
It was fantastic.
And he hands off the brolly, and the butler gives him a great little nod, and he returns that nod. You're right. It's a good moment. Linda demands to know why Spike isn't surprised. Now, it's not immediately clear to the viewer what she means by this, but Spike gets it. Why isn't he surprised the fearless leader is suddenly so nervous in this situation? And over a slow pan of all the important people that Linda has come here to see and be seen by, he explains the school dance, a six-year social, Sarah's birthday party, Kevin's birthday party, Julie's birthday party, the end-of-term disco, the mid-term disco, the start-of-term disco, and the disco disco. She wasn't at any of them. So Spike thinks he understands why, and her hiccup confirms it. Can't socialize. Yeah. Anything she says comes out as an order. She says hello and people salute. However, beautifully, we're snapped out of this reverie by an arrival. Two arrivals.
Oh, man.
The girls of Doom.
I will use a term that I have never used before.
Mm.
But when these two girls show up dressed in the way they are, I am going to call this image nightmare fuel.
Well, crumbs. That's
the
a good
little
call.
Uniforms with little headdress thingies they're wearing.
Yeah,
they are approaching me, and they are about to pull a large butcher knife from behind their back, and collectively murder me.
Yes, this is a British horror story, the less known.
Yeah. Yes,
British horror story, Downton Abbey house.
Yes, British horror story, large estate.
Yes, absolutely. Dear Lord. I've got it as the unexpected arrival of the Girls of Doom.
Yes.
Sophie and Laura in tiny...
The Devil Girls.
Tiny waitstaff.
Serving deviled eggs.
That was beautiful, man. They're there as part of their cookery project, thanks to Mr. Sullivan.
What? What's a cookery project, Chris?
Well, for home economics, presumably. They've got a project to do some cooking. So, Sullivan arranged it because the science department wouldn't lend them their rabbit for their cookery project. So that was a joke.
The science department
don't have a rabbit. Not anymore.
I enjoy rabbit. It's actually quite tasty. My mother cooks a mean rabbit.
I've never had rabbit, despite being one of them fac in London, as I talked about earlier. I've also never had jellied eels, mate.
Yeah.
There you go. I'm afraid I kind of muffed the bit about the science department not having a rabbit anymore.
Anymore, yeah. I was trying to cut in as well, which interrupted your transmission of the idea. So are we supposed to believe that these girls have stolen it?
Well, I think we're supposed to believe that they've previously cooked it or somehow caused its death.
Yeah.
However, I also get the impression that Laura and Sophie are well aware of their reputation and enjoy stoking it at any given opportunity.
Agreed.
So, but anyway, they exit giggling.
Yeah.
Spike tells us he knows three guys.
Very disconcerting sound.
Yes. Spike knows three guys in the fifth year who pays those two protection money.
Mm-hmm.
Sullivan, who's strolled over to join them, wonders if they're on the same rate as the staff. Boom, boom! It's now Sullivan's turn to encounter the nervous hick. And he tells... That does sound like... now I say nervous hick. That does sound like a fella from the South who's a bit timid, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Well, gosh, I can't talk to people. Nervous sick. See also the timid cracker. Boom. Tumbleweeds. Cracker is a... Cracker's not a, a... It's not an epithet that has taken off over here.
Neither in Canada.
Mm. Which is why we had a program called Cracker, starring Robbie Coltrane as guy.
That's hilarious.
Well,
it was his nickname Cracker?
Yeah, his nickname was Fitz, because his name was Fitz William or Fitzmaurice or something like that. Robbie Coltrane, he was a criminal profiler type guy. And when they remade it in the US, they called it Fitz, I believe. They didn't call it Cracker for some reason.
No.
Although I seem to recall hearing that Chris Carter of the X-Files and more famously Millennium Fame enjoyed Cracker, the UK Cracker, which is probably where he got his boner for FBI profilers from.
Yeah.
And then created one infinitely better than the other one.
Mm-hmm. Who was actually a profiler.
Yes.
Yeah.
I like the X-Files, but Millennium really was extremely good.
Very good. I remember watching it live.
Very good in it.
Yeah, it was my favorite show, and no one else I knew was watching it.
Yeah, one of those things, isn't it?
Yeah, we didn't have the internet back then.
Ah, okay. So, yeah, Sullivan tries to get Linda to come over and join him and Kerr and some old colleagues, but she hiccups again and legs it. And
see ya!
Yeah, the lovely exchange here between the two. Just, sir, you've known Linda a lot longer than I have. She is mad, isn't she?
Oh, yes. That's the best. Oh, yes.
He's so fast. Oh, yeah. Glug.
Yeah.
Looking good. Burgundy waistcoat, matching bow tie.
Yeah.
And a suit in the... He's a larger gentleman. He wears a suit extremely well. In a way I wish I could. I look...
Yeah,
I tend to look like a bunch of sandbags that someone stuffed into a suit, sadly.
Oh, Chris.
So I need...
That is a delightful picture.
Thank you. So I really need Sullivan's tailor.
Linda is hiding next to the plant.
Yes, nervously bobbing up and down in a corner. She was just going to the toilet.
Nope.
Do you want me to move that potted plant closer?
That was great. Because I had the same thought. What, you going to pee in the plant?
Yeah. Not appreciating this excellent joke, she strides off again with Spike in pursuit. I feel like I've already written 400 variations on that sentence at this point.
Folks, just take it for granted. Linda is moving, and whenever she moves away from her problems, Spike is behind her, trying to get her to face her dragon.
Yeah, man. He can't go to the bathroom with her, that's true, but he can check it's not an excuse for her to slip off and go home.
Mm-hmm.
On the way to the bathroom, the two are again accosted by the Terror Twins.
The Terror Twins have committed, in this scene, two faux pas. Faux pas number one, you never touch the food.
Yeah.
That you're serving, and also definitely, and this is 1B, you never shove it up to someone's face asking them to taste it. And also, one of them is wearing a wristwatch.
Oh.
You don't wear a wristwatch when you're in the service industry.
You have lots of bacteria under it.
Don't do that. Also, it's just distracting.
It's very nasty.
We've provided you with these little teeny tiny Dickensian youth work camp sized uniforms, and you're gonna bring your own flair. Don't bring your own flair.
Oh dear. But anyway, yes. They are accosted and they try out the mini sausage rolls that are offered. They're not bad. They're quite reasonable, really.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're straight into it. Can you taste any disinfectant on them? Carpet fluff, axle grease, silence. Good. I told you they'd be all right. And they despair, and our two heroes gob the sausage rolls into a nearby
vase.
Yes, many of you will say, many of our listeners might say vase or vase. I'm going to say vase. Just get used to that.
It's serving as a spittoon.
Indeed,
but it's definitely a vase.
When I saw this, I assumed that vase was a thing they'd brought with them, because it's in the script that they keep gobbing stuff into a vase.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what? They didn't bring that with them. That vase is part of the house.
That's
when Moffat comments on this, when Spike puts it down, he puts it down slightly too heavily.
Mm-hmm.
And you think if the owners of the house had seen them do that, they would have been huge ructions. But also, they do gob a load of stuff into it. That was probably agreed on beforehand.
I hope so.
But anyway, just knowing that's a real expensive thing from that house, genuinely pricey, and he just thuds it back down the side is quite something. But there you go. And Linda finally heads into the bathroom past a little statue and past some stairs that I know for a fact lead upstairs to a room where Stephen Moffat is on location writing episode 10.
Because he says so in the commentary?
Yes. That's he was certainly upstairs in the house, and I think he remembers being like near the top of those because he would be typing and then they'd be doing takes in the hallway, so he'd have to stop because he was using an old noisy typewriter.
Of course.
And he would do that thing where he heard his own dialogue come back to him up the stairs and think, God, that's funny. You know? Or he said it makes you mad with power. You gotta type it in here, it comes out down there. but yes, he was doing some stuff, and I think I've alluded to this a lot in the past, but I think we are very definitely now in the place where Moffat is kind of mid-divorce. It's getting a bit messy for him as a writer, and that will show more and more as the season goes on.
Very interesting. So Spike double checks that Linda's not going to leave. She pokes her head out. She sees him still surveying the situation and guarding her. She pokes herself back into the bathroom. Mm-hmm. Spike turns around with a determined look on his face for some reason. I didn't understand why. And as he heads back towards the room where the party's taking place, we see a member of serving staff, which is not a teenage girl.
Oh.
And who I have paused here, dear listeners, at the 13-minute and 43-second mark, because I'm convinced that this waiter right here is Matt Kerr's less successful brother.
Oh, I actually remember having that thought when I saw him, and it wasn't until you said it that I've actually given it any sort of credence whatsoever.
He looks a lot like Matt Kerr.
It's mostly in the size of the spikiness of the hair, surely.
I don't know, man. I'm looking at this again, 13 minutes, 43 seconds, and I'm, you know what, Matt Kerr maybe pulled a couple strings, got him a gig at this party.
What's even better is if you spin on a bit, Dexter turns around slightly and checks him out.
Yeah, I know.
So, hey, he's got back. So, yeah, meanwhile, Linda is in what is apparently a bathroom.
I am super happy to see bathrooms on television as large as my own. Finally. Oh, my God. God, this bathroom. There's a chair for sitting?
Yeah, it's a kind of triple or quadruple chair circular thing. There is a towel rack on the right that suggests bathroom. However, it's carpeted. I think this is just a regular room that they've put a towel rack in.
And that's a mobile, it's definitely a mobile towel rack. It may not even be a towel rack. Mm. It may actually be a tea table, but someone just put a foldable tea table and someone just put a towel over it.
To be honest, it's just whatever was available in the house. The script calls for her to go into a bathroom, lean against the bathroom door and sort of slide down it to end up sitting on the floor. But here she finds those dainty little seats. Mm-hmm. And she sits in those in frustration, flings her handbag off screen and smashes something.
And we hear the lovely smashing sound that we all have somewhere on our computers.
It's different from the BBC glass smashing sound I'm familiar with.
Okay, cool.
The one that the Auton breaks out of a shop window in Spearhead from Space in 1973. Oh, and I played it, but even though I've got the sound turned down, waiting to hear that sound, even though I'm not going to.
Mm-hmm.
Back at the party, my favourite stuff, man. Sullivan's carrying two drinks.
Mm-hmm.
Mike asks if he's found a friend. He said, I'm cultivating one. He indicates a very glamorous woman that he's about to swoop upon with his bold charms.
Yep.
Spike bets him a fiver, he hasn't got a chance. And a lovely exchange. Do you remember it?
Not offhand. Go for it.
But Spike, what have I told you about betting? Never try it with me. Fiver it is.
Yeah.
And he exits with renewed vigor.
Now there's a side to this that's kind of terrible.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also a side to this that's just fantastic. Because Spike is doubting Sullivan's game. Do not doubt Sullivan's game.
We've seen him attract some fine-looking dates.
Sullivan is a charming man, and you should never judge a book by its cover.
Yeah, he's got his own.
Or bald spot.
He's got a regular job. He's a good guy. He dresses well. He's got his own home.
He's not one of those nice guys!
I think that is the low point of Kenny. I do like him as a character. I want to make that clear. It's just that, unfortunately, he's been tarred by every other self-proclaimed nice guy I've ever encountered, and does occasionally act like one of those guys as well.
Yeah.
And is the Moffat analog, clearly, for this series. But yeah, so in order to entertain himself further, Spike goes over to talk to Nabil Hafiz, the Arab chap who arrived in the limo earlier.
Nabil Hafiz.
Yeah. So Hafiz turns to see Spike and, oh dear.
Yeah, I just want to give a shout out to Cannonball Run and the inimitable Jamie Farr.
Yeah.
For those of you that are not aware of what I'm talking about, first of all, fuck off, because you should. Cannonball Run is amazing, and you should have watched it already in your life. Otherwise, your life is slightly sad and pitiful.
Dun-dun-dun! Him knows.
Yeah. Jamie Farr is basically wearing this outfit in the movie. And when I first saw this scene, I was like, oh, why didn't they put the reflective sunglasses on him? And then I realized that he does have them. He's holding them in his hand.
Yep.
Oh, man. This was very unexpected.
Now, on the commentary again, we've got Julia. She doesn't seem particularly offended by this.
No.
She just certainly doesn't say anything. Moffat is very much kind of, oh dear. Like, the notion of the comedy Arab is very much reduced since I did it. And those are commentaries from, like, 2005 or thereabouts as well. Yeah. And he's like, yeah, the old youthful innocence. It's kind of lost now. It's so there's always a problem with you. The thing is, it's very in keeping with this character, though. Colin would get himself in brown faced, stick a tea towel on his head, and say things like, "May all your camels be bountiful," and try and con someone. So, in that regard, I don't mind it. It's a lot about Colin and not about actual Arabs.
Oh, yeah, no, this is all about Colin. It's not about Arabs.
So, yeah.
And at the time, with Jamie Farr and Cannonball Run, this is fantastic. I'm especially concerned about this person liking the proposal, but, you know.
Yes, a very businessy-looking man who looks a bit like Mike Reed, who was in Snatch, by the way, brandishing a prospectus. He returns. He registers his interest in doing business with Mr. Hafiz and his uncle. And that's where we have "May all your camels be bountiful." And actually, we get a good note about white people here, because that makes no sense. But he's like, "Oh yes, indeed, very good," because he's too embarrassed to not do that. So Spike drags Colin away with the prospectus. Says he'll thank me later. They don't.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert: they don't thank him later. And in fact, they immediately get back into business with him.
It's really crazy.
We briefly cut to Linda throwing a bunch of broken perfume bottles into the bin, catching herself in a mirror and hiccuping again. But in another empty room, Nabil Hafiz protests his innocence. "Who is this Colin Matthews? I'm Nabil Hafiz, an Arab from Arabia." So Colin's latest scheme is selling oil fields under Norbridge High School. And having seen through Colin's masterful disguise, Spike's not thrilled about it. Colin got the car from his actual uncle, who's in on the scheme.
Uh-huh.
And really plausibly, because you might think, how do you end up here? He's got an actual invitation. He's a business partner of the paper. So his invitation is completely genuine.
Yeah.
They don't forget that that's a fact, and I like that. So Spike's reasonably concerned that it might hamper Linda's attempts to make a good impression if her own financial advisor is putting on brown face with an accent to match, sticking a tea towel on his head and trying to con local business owners out of land he doesn't own with a non-existent promise under them. So cut it out now. So Colin tries to encounter with some truth bombs about Linda.
Mm-hmm.
And he plays to masculine pride. He's like, "Oh, you're a mug. You think you can get with her? We're leaving school in a few months. You're never going to see her again. Tonight's about her career. She plays it right, she'll take off like a rocket, and you're just helping out on the launch pad. You know, you'll..."
This was so brutal!
Yeah. And it's more...
Man, Colin, I hate your guts right now.
Well, I think...
Being so mean.
This is Colin's version of trying to help, although it also means he's trying to get Spike on side with a new scheme that will involve Spike wearing a blonde wig and a dress.
Yeah.
Be interested to see how that one was meant to play out, but never mind. I don't see Spike making a convincing woman, but that's, again, not my business.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't have to convince as a woman, of course. Oh, I feel bad now. I don't think any of my trans pals listen to this, but if they do, I'm really sorry.
Talk.
So there you go. Yeah, but this kind of takes the wind out of Spike's sails a bit, because he realises that there's a potential that if Linda does well this evening, she'll start doing really well in life, far better than him, and he'll lose her. It doesn't mean that you won't get the girl, but he will just lose contact with her, because she'll be busy doing other stuff, while he's just like this layabout guy who didn't do anything with his life.
Yeah.
So there you go. So Spike, he's clearly thinking about it. He drags Colin out of the room. And Colin does a comedy re-entrance about his schemes going, tell you're thinking about it. Upon exiting the bathroom, this shot is like from a whodunit. Especially since like Spears puts the camera behind that statue as well. Linda exits the bathroom and sees like a mysterious Arab come out of a room ahead of her and skulk back to the party. And then it'd be like, I got Hercule Poirot going, and 9:20 is when Miss Fortescue said she saw the Arab, no?
Indeed.
So the malicious mademoiselles empty the contents of two plates into the big vase in the hallway.
Mm-hmm.
Linda very unsensibly looks into, just grimaces, walks away. Spike doesn't seem to be about, so Linda actually heads off into the party again. This is progress.
Mm-hmm.
And we see from her
this
point of view.
This is very, very, very interesting.
Yeah. But she's psyching herself up for it. We see from her point of view lots of very swanky, important people. Kerr and Sullivan are talking to someone who seems particularly significant. You can tell by the eyebrows and the hair. I think if you're in a situation that fancy, you don't let yourself look that untidy unless you're really important.
Yeah.
I'm going to mention him now because this is one of the facts I found. The character is called, Mr. Mayer, Robert Mayer. He doesn't have a column, he has a newspaper. The actor is called John Ronayne, and he's not been a... There's a lot of gaps in his screen career. For example, there's a gap for this in 1990 to 2012.
Uh-huh. Interesting.
But his screen appearance before this was in an episode of a thing called Howard's Way, which is a program about like a boat company. It's very, very yuppie-ish. It was a soap opera about a very capitalist soap opera about money and glamorous things. Can't remember if they were a boat hire firm or if they sold them or whatever it was. Don't remember. But his character in 1986, his screen appearance before this was Counselor Stephen Moffat.
No.
Stephen with a V, Moffat with one T, exactly the same spelling.
That's hilarious.
And Stephen Moffat wasn't a known name in television at that time. It's just it can only be a complete coincidence.
Wow. That's really something.
It really is. I was so impressed by that I had to get it in there. But yeah, so that's him. We'll get to hear more of him later in his very calming voice. And sadly, this sets off her hiccuping again. She heads for her coat and then the door. Spike's appeared in the doorway looking disapproving. But yeah, she really can't face it. She tells Spike, don't make me. And as a result of exactly what Colin said to him, he's going to make a decision. And he makes the decision to agree to take her away from it. He promises not to tell anyone at the newspaper. He won't argue.
Mm-hmm.
She appreciates this and he does some brilliant stuff. The script says, like, he can't meet her eye. And he's suddenly very quiet and very sheepish because he now feels like a real heel for doing the thing that will benefit him.
Yeah.
He's not doing the right thing. He knows it. It's the choice between getting the girl or helping her become so important she won't have time for him anymore. Yeah.
And
so, yeah.
He is right now a dragon and he must slay it.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I figured that social anxiety was the dragon, but maybe he is it.
I think this is it.
Oh, that's good.
I think I think at this point he's probably the dragon.
I like that so much more.
He's taken her away from where she should be.
Yeah, you're good at this, guy.
Yeah, every once in a while.
So yeah, outside the house, Linda continues to talk about her inability to socialise, how she pretended to be ill at her own 14th birthday party. Mm-hmm. Kenny came up to her room, they played chess all evening. Spikes, yeah, good old Kenny. And he means that, because he's now mm-hmm. thinking, oh, I'm not a very nice guy. But Kenny's a nice guy.
As we've discussed.
Yes, but no, but like, and then Linda's like, good old Spike. So she's really grateful. She's grateful that Spike got her out of there. And that's all he needed to hear. He gets suddenly really annoyed. Now she does gratitude. That is a lousy trick. And I think he realizes he's been played slightly. Because she's never grateful for things like this. It's just it's a manipulation. And also he's kind of walked in on himself. He realizes that he's been a dick. So he just drags her back to the house. She's going back in. It's going to hurt him a lot more than it hurts her. And he does a line that's just for us, not for Linda, because she won't make sense to her. He says, have you gone off your head? And he goes, completely. Sad, isn't it? And yeah, we know what that means. She doesn't. Spike rings the doorbell. He has to deal with the butler again. I caught this one trying to escape. Yeah. And inside, Solomon and Kerr are discussing Linda's whereabouts when Spike arrives with her in tow. The editor will see you now. Spike having this is Spike doing the right thing, and I think weirdly now the nervousness seems to have dropped from Linda. Now she's had that moment of almost escape. Yeah, Kerr compliments Linda's look and Spike's look. He says he's not looking such a hoodlum as normal.
Exactly.
Spike says, "Thank you, sir, and you."
Yeah, that's the best. That was fantastic.
He said he probably wasn't wearing the cowboy boots on this occasion
and the denim.
Mm. Yeah, Kerr tells Linda he's been boasting about her all evening. He's glad she's made an entrance. He's got that bossy voice. Because it would have been very embarrassing if you weren't to make an appearance.
Yeah.
Mine's basically bad Matt Berry. Sorry, I don't have the command in the voice that I'd like to have.
Yeah, every once in a while I go into a Matt Berry impression when I'm trying to convey pompitude. It's really great.
Yes, convey pompitude.
Do you know what I used to call that as a child?
Wow. So yeah, he talks about the boasting and then introduces Linda to one of the boasties, the formerly mentioned Robert Mayer, newspaper owner and relaxing voiced man.
So, I need to leave in a few moments, but I thought I'd like to get a chat with you.
It's almost like an ASMR YouTube video.
Yes, ASMR editor 2. Yeah, Linda is the original ASMR editor, as you may recall from our old thing. Mayor, however, he does get the permission of the gents to take Linda away because of old school bullshit.
He does.
And I don't know if it's just because of old school bullshit or because Spike doesn't respond. Like, Solomon and Kerr were like, oh, of course. And Spike's like, nothing. Because he'd rather he didn't take her away, but he has to. He has to sort of concede and allow it to happen. So, yeah. And as they leave together, Spike says to Kerr and Sullivan, we have liftoff, which they don't understand. And on screen, someone breaks some crockery with a loud smash. He goes, don't look at me. It wasn't my heart. Walks off. Now, in any other show, Sullivan and Kerr would look baffled by this phrase, but in this one, they get what he means. Yeah. And Sullivan just goes, oh, dear. Cameron Campbell's wife asks him where the car keys are. Where are the car keys, Aluria?
Probably in the bowl.
Yeah, they're in the big vase in the hallway. not in the swinging bowl.
Oh, no. Okay.
Meanwhile, Laura tells Sophie she shouldn't have eaten the ones with the green bits in, but it's lucky they made it to the vase on time.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, it feels like the wrong order to do those lines in, but...
Agreed.
It probably does help, because I think you get two out of it instead of just one.
Yeah.
Actually, you just think of putting her hand in there with the shit food in there, and you go, ugh. And then with his puke as well, you go, ugh, again. So actually, it's pretty canny. So, Spike, in order to cheer himself up with a dash of spite, searches out Nabil Hafiz again.
Nabil! Habibi, how are you?
Yeah. Oh, he goes, hey, Nabi! He continues to schmooze the same guys he was talking to earlier. He persuades them that Nabi is an absolutely fascinating speaker on the subject of his native culture. He's so interesting. I've learned so much. Hey, Nabi, why don't you give us a little rundown now? Don't be shy. Give us the lot in detail from the start. Now.
Freeze frame.
Absolute freeze frame.
Connor. That was an actual freeze frame.
It was weird.
I don't. Why did they do that? Maybe because most people don't notice. But I totally. It was weird.
Again, it's in the script. It's in the script.
Is it really to a freeze frame? Oh, never mind. Okay, that was on purpose, folks.
And there you go. I think it's just like, oh, Colin pulls a face, and we hold it for as long as we can.
Yeah.
A little bit of water for me. Num num num. Nice. And that's it. And now it's much later. Spike is walking Linda home. They were meant to get a taxi, but he lost the fiver he had.
Boom! Amazing! Yes. That is the greatest! I'm so happy!
That's a good little joke, that.
So happy that that was it. That's really good. That's, like, really, really good.
Yeah.
Ah, that was so satisfying. On so many levels.
I bet it was.
Hey, now.
Woo! Well, you know, all the... boldness and virility, you know.
Woo!
So, yeah, Linda's laughing at Colin's attempts to tell the story of his people.
Yeah.
He said the capital of Saudi Arabia was Brigadoon, which is a joke I don't imagine you'd write for young people now, either to perform or to understand as an audience.
Uh-huh.
It's a very strange joke, but they find it funny anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And, true confession... I got a bit teary when I was writing up this little bit just before we started, and I was I mentioned it now because I was worried that I would actually get a bit teary while we talk about it, and I hope it doesn't happen, but there you go. Dropbox, because I've got automated image things turned on, has suddenly decided to add like 4 images I put on my computer this morning, so I've just had like doo-doo-doo in my ear 4 times in a row while I was trying to speak. Very confusing stuff. They arrive at Linda's door. We're back in business now. Oh, there we go again. And she tells Spike she had an amazing night tonight. He says, everybody wants Linda, huh? You know how it is. He says, yeah. She wouldn't have had an amazing time if it hadn't been for you. You were wonderful. He says, I'm a wonderful guy. He says, yeah, you are. After some more awkward chat and an offer to shake hands, Linda actually goes in for the goodnight kiss. And she breaks it off because she says Spike is shaking and he claims to be steady as a rock. That's just the world moving. But marvellously trails off at the end of that sentence. He doesn't quite get the moving out. And that's another moment where I wish to see what it would have been like without him trying to do the accent as well. Because he's acting up a storm through it. It's remarkable. And so she goes for the kiss again, breaks off again, and then a most wonderful moment happens. He says, Spike,
go on.
I think you're getting the wrong idea about this kiss. He says, no, absolutely not. This is just a goodnight kiss, a thank you kiss between friends, right? I understand. And she says, I knew you were getting the wrong idea.
Yay!
And they go in for a kiss, and god damn, it's amazing.
Yeah, it was really good.
The script says that this kiss is to be held for as long as the time slot will allow. Because you have to be a bit careful with sort of sexuality on children's programming.
Yeah.
Apparently there was a complaint on our... We have a thing called Teletext... Or had a thing called Teletext, which was little digital news pages that we sent alongside the television signal. You could watch them, you could get news and like letters pages. And apparently, on one of them, CFAX, there was a complaint about the use of tongues during this kissing scene. The one from my youth I remember was a program set in Newcastle called Baker Grove, or Biker Grove, if you speak like I do. A biker with a BY, because the place is called Biker Grove. Nothing to do with people on bikes, although bikes featured. That had a scene with some very heavy kissing as well, and possibly upper chest touching through a sweater. I don't remember that, but that was at a similar time slot as well, like before 5 p.m. And that ruffles some feathers, even though it was relatively innocent and it's what teenagers do, you know. But you have to be careful. So I guess this is why he said... You know, for as long as the time slot will allow. So they push it just about as far as they could. Julie on the commentary says they loved doing this because they were mad about each other. I don't know if they were officially an item at this point, but it was not far off. And a kiss like this just kind of gives that away.
Yeah.
She says they love it because they had to do like her over the shoulder and his over the shoulder and like establishing shots. So they had to do the whole big kiss at least 3 times, which I thought was great. Obviously. Moffat's only suggestion is to look at Dexter's lips and go, weren't you terrified? But she has little to add to that. I think she just says, don't be nasty. They say they're not together now, but as far as I know, they're on good terms.
Yeah.
Yeah, so when the kiss is over, he asks if he remembers his name. It's Spike, right? He goes, oh, that's who you are. The last minute bit of Linda. And she opens her gate, walks up to the front door and goes in, leaving Spike on the pavement. And as the music goes slightly strange, Spike develops the mystical powers of adolescent excitement. Now, I mean, this is possibly the first time that Moffat steps slightly outside reality. He does this a lot later, you know. You've seen it in Coupling and things like that. And you'll see a bit of it later on in Joking Apart as well. But also, I do remember what it's like being a teenager and having had a big kiss with a very nice person. You do somehow feel like you've got magic powers and everything in the world is going your way.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know if you share this experience.
Oh, I do. I know exactly what you're talking about.
And so we're not literally saying that Spike clicks his fingers and the gate shuts magically, but like he just feels like he could.
Yeah.
And he puts his finger on a light bulb, on a lamppost, and the light...
Lamppost and light bulb goes on.
Yeah, springs into life. And, of course, he yells, yo, and leaps 15 feet in the fucking air. Because he does, and the synth harmonica goes... Wah, 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 wah. and we're done.
Was it the pilot? The first episode where he leapt 15 feet up into the air?
Nope, it was the second one. Photo finish.
Thank you.
And that's it. And we get end credits. We get a very exciting, brassy version of the theme tune.
Mm-hmm.
And zero voiceover.
Zero voiceover.
So lots of first no things in this. First time we didn't have most of the cast. First time there wasn't a newsroom. First time there wasn't a news story. True. The first time there wasn't a voiceover at the end.
Hold on. Stop the podcast. Past Chris, it's me, present Chris. Also soon to be past Chris. Sadly, that's the way linear time works. You've forgotten about Monday, Tuesday, haven't you? You have, haven't you? There was no voiceover on the end of that. And therefore, this isn't the first one. That's the first one, isn't it? You can't answer me. Oh, you can't answer me because you're in the past. And that's how linear time works. I'd already forgotten. Because my present is now in the past. Confusing times, really. Anyway, I couldn't let that glaring error stand. Even though I often let glaring errors stand. And now, back to the podcast. Bye.
The voiceovers do start drying up at this point because Moffat, he'd realised that he was not having so much fun writing them. People didn't have fun recording them. They had to come in like on a recording studio and just read them off a page. Something he'd frequently just written like 20 minutes before they had to record it.
Yeah.
And also, the entire concept had been lifted wholesale for a comedy for grown-ups called Drop the Dead Donkey, set in a TV newsroom. Yeah. The exact same idea. And done in the exact same way. At the end credits, the white text on black, you lose most of the theme tune until you just have a sort of dun-dun-dun-dun-dun bit rolling around. And two characters say their little bit and then it comes up again. Exactly the same. And so I think he felt it wasn't theirs anymore, you know?
No.
And so he stopped doing it. And that's it. And that is At Last a Dragon. And that is how Spike slayed the dragon of either social anxiety or his own sort of masculine balls.
Pretty awesome.
It's great, isn't it?
I love it. It really is.
I know that at least one of our listeners said that they didn't feel there was enough going on in it, but it's so character business. And in the end, it's a lot more about Spike than it is about Linda as well. It doesn't feel like it when you're watching it because Linda's in a lot of it and does some important stuff.
No, but this is all about Spike.
I have so little to say about it that I haven't already added. It's just wonderful. And this was, these were technically our birthday episode.
Yeah.
So the previous one was before both of our own birthdays in this year. So, what a gift to have.
Indeed. It's many years delayed, but it's lovely.
Mine was spot on.
That's great. That's really awesome.
Yes, again, I saw it at the time. That's loved it then, love it now. Well. Yeah, I've talked a lot on this one. Do you have anything you'd like to say?
No, I'm good. I'm really happy with this episode. I thought it was really great. I mentioned this earlier. I'll say it again. I love it when shows that are set around usual sets go and do something else.
Yeah.
And it actually has purpose. And I'm not talking about, you know, Full House going to Hawaii or all of that other stuff that might happen. I'm talking about, you know, stuff usually happens in this environment. Let's go somewhere else. Example, anytime on Taxi, they went to Chris's apartment. instead of just around the dispatch office. Things like that, right? Like when there'd be a secondary location on night court, instead of everything happening at the courthouse or the cafeteria, you'd have an episode where they'd go to someone's apartment. Things like that. I for some reason, always really looked forward to that kind of episode because I knew that it would mean something different. And the fact that there was no newsroom, that there was no school, that it was really just out and about and doing that for a specific event and a certain reason was great. I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah, and it's a lot more grown up episode. They're treated as adults, so you forget it's a kind of kid drama. So actually having the horror twins in it as much as it is quite a clever move as well for younger viewers to retain interest, because otherwise it could be potentially quite a dull thing if you're not interested in really quite good acting and a character arc.
Yeah.
So they're just in for a laugh. And as about Colin's Arab is, it's not as funny as I think it should have been, but again, it's more about Colin than anything else. So I think, shall we get into fashion chats? All right then, I'll cue up the sting. This sting right here. The heralds the arrival of Best Dressed, Worst Dressed, as sponsored by Ramjack Podcast.
RamjackPodcast.com. All right. Listen, it's Sullivan for me, Best Dressed.
Yeah, not off. He's the only one winner. I've written down.
It's winner, winner, chicken dinner. I do.
In an episode where basically everyone looks great apart from, like, your horror twins and a particular example, but, like, and everyone's in, like, nice evening wear. All the dudes are wearing suits and look great, really good suits, not, like, ill shabby things. Yeah. It's hard, but Sullivan's combo of the burgundy waistcoat and the bow tie, fantastic.
Mm-hmm. I did have early on Linda in robe and towel on her head. It was a really great look, but I'm not going in that direction. Spike was very close, especially when he had that lovely handkerchief in his pocket that played very well off the tie that was multicolored. That was really great. Worst dressed? I mean, I have Colin.
Yeah, on principle.
On principle.
I've got Colin.
And fashion-wise, Linda in those jackets was not very good, but she looks good under the jacket. It's really... there's this woman at the 17 minute and 34 second mark. She's in blue.
Right.
And that's not a good look for her. But these are random people. 17 minutes and 34 seconds.
I saw her. Yeah, that isn't a good
look.
She's
in blue. It's not a very good look. But I mean, really, I think I'd just go on principle, Colin.
The problem with Linda's getup is that the dress is good, the earrings are good, and the purple and green coat is also good. It's just that not together they aren't.
Yeah. Agreed.
And that doesn't necessarily make it worse dressed. It makes it, or even bad dressed, it makes it badly dressed.
Yes.
But none of the clothes are bad, in my opinion. Certainly, again, for the era. So, I'd say, purely upon principle, I am picking Colin. Because he just wore some sheets and a tea towel and a headband.
Same.
And there you go. Right, it's feedback time, Gaio.
Hey, have this bit of audio feedback ready here.
Oh, cool. Do you want to do audio feedback or this email from Brandon?
Let's do audio feedback.
All right, then. Audio feedback from Matt, our most devoted audio feedbacker, has to be said. He always titles his feedback partially with the episode, like Bird's Feedback and things like that. This one was, as I hoped, at last, a feedback. So thank you so much for that. Who wants to do the count off? Do you want to count off?
Well, hold on. He mentions feedback hiccup for the one with the hiccup, dragon slaying.
Fair enough.
I'd be happy to do the count off. We'll hit play on 3, 2, 1, play.
Was Colin an orange face? So that's what it looked like. That's not good, Colin. You gotta dial it back just a bit. You're in danger of going from funny side character to racist, which is not a good transition. Okay, so I posted on Facebook that I wasn't feeling this episode. For starters, I enjoy these kids most when they're newspapering and solving newspaper-related problems. There have been some successful side episodes. Episodes not set at the Junior Gazette, but this one didn't work for me because there was too much Spike. And maybe I've said before that I'm a Spike Linda shipper, or maybe Chris just decided that I was and I went along with it. Oh. But I love Linda. I don't really like Spike. Oh. He's okay, but in small doses. This was so much Spike. This was banter, 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 witty comeback, witty crack, sarcasm, banter, 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 waka waka. It was exhausting. Hey. Of course, this show does that kind of dialogue well, but I appreciated when the episode was concluding and things quieted down and there was an actual conversation. Words said sincerely, with emotion, not just the artificial, look how clever we can be with our wordplay element that dominated the first part of this one. So, hey, what else happened? The little ghouls were back. They were putting food in vases or vases. That was weird and random. Colin was a racist. Matt Kerr finally reappeared. Mr. Sullivan scored with some hot chick, it looked like.
Yeah, boy.
Yeah, whatever. 1 out of 5 Brigadoons.
Oh, yes, that's dude. All
I got. Wow. I might revisit this one later and score it higher. Seems to
when
be
you're
my
not crazy.
MO. All right, goodbye.
Wow. I apologize. I'm not. I don't mean to make light of that and call you crazy, but I disagree vehemently. But you know what? You're entitled to your opinion, so
Matt,
go for it.
Matt does generally approach these differently to us. I'm sorry if I have ascribed a shipping forecast to you, Matt. I didn't mean to do that. I genuinely thought there was one where you'd been excited about a kiss or a moment between the two of them, and I may have got you confused with someone else or misinterpreted what you meant to say. I very much understand the notion of liking Linda and finding Spike a bit annoying, particularly with that accent. If it's an accent that just grates with you the whole time, I can see that could be an issue.
Yeah. To be fair, if I disliked Spike, then I would also not give this episode a very good grade.
Oh no, of course, and that makes a lot of sense. So I understand. And do you want to see what Brandon has to say, guy?
Yes, Brandon Jones.
Again, not to be confused with Brandon James from the TV series version of Scream, which was above average.
As our lead couple starts, I'm about to die from all the witty repartee. It's not just... Pardon me, I'm going to... I think I'm going to start this one over.
All right. Don't expect me to edit round it, though.
No, I'll just ask you later to secretly do that. Dragon to be seen.
You have to ask Claire to do that.
Damn it. Oh, I get that wrong every time. Not a dragon to be seen is the subject of the email. Brandon writes, as our lead couple starts, I'm about to die from all the witty repartee. It's not until Linda shows her vulnerable side that I'm really liking this. Who in the world thought the Terra Twins would be good servers at a posh event?
Sullivan thought that. That's
honestly, Spike and Sophie and Laura are two of the creepiest characters Moffat ever wrote. Oh, could you imagine Sophie and Laura making an appearance in Doctor Who?
No.
That would be really funny.
Especially, would you somehow try to CGI recreate the young ones? Or like?
Oh, it would have to be young girls just playing the characters. I mean, it doesn't have to be the actresses. Oh, and I watched Jekyll and Doctor Who. Yes. It seems that all the non-speaking extras were given only one acting note. Watch again, all they do is smile and nod.
That's that kind of event.
We get it. There's free booze. They're going to smile and nod a lot. We get a nice dropped line telling us that Mr. Sullivan got lucky.
Whoa.
Then suddenly Spike develops telekinetic powers. What a kiss that must have been. A snap of the fingers closes the gate and a tap of the pole turns on a streetlight. Overall, a good episode and character development.
Yes.
By authority and permission of the superiors.
Classy balls. Fantastic. Yeah. Time for rating talk, guy.
Boom. 5 out of 5 for me. Yeah. It was great. I thought it was excellent. The ducks, you know, really did it for me.
It's Bob Spears and his duck thing.
Yeah.
I've thought really long and hard about this, and no, I haven't. It's 5. It's great. Not much happens, but so much happens.
Yeah.
Oh. And yeah,
not much is going on, but everything else.
And it proved it could be a series about not necessarily just these two, but about the characters rather than about the newspaper.
Agreed.
And it's great, but yeah, it's also very much the point where it's absolutely transmogrified into the Spike and Linda romance series.
Yeah.
I mean, some people might like less than the newspaper.
How many episodes in series one? 12, 13?
12.
12 plus 5, that's 17 episodes of setup.
Yes, 12, so 17.
17 episodes of setup.
Yep.
And the payoff is fantastic.
It is. So, do you think they're boyfriend and girlfriend now?
Ooh, I don't know. We'll see. We'll ask Kenny what he thinks.
I was like, oh, I don't mind either way. You know, I think everything's great. Also, the world is terrible.
Gloomy Gus Kenny? Is that what we're getting? Sad Kenny?
Kind of.
Yeah, all right. Yeah.
So,
when's Billy coming back, man?
He will come back. I promise. I promise. Yay! You'll see more Billy.
Yay.
All right.
Thank goodness.
However, it's time to talk about next week.
What? There's another episode? That wasn't the series finale?
It'd be great. That would be a really good place to just end it. Wouldn't it? You go, that's lovely. No, there's more. Next week we have Something Terrible, Part 1.
Ooh. All right. Someone does something terrible.
That's true. That is a thing that occurs. As you know, I like to have a guess. So I'm going to guess for Something Terrible's Part 1 and Part 2, because obviously in Part 1 I'm not going to guess what happens in Part 2. I have done that before. I did do that in How to Make a Killing. On this occasion, I'm not going to want to, but you'll see. I think because it's 1990 part... I think it's because it's 1990 now. In Something Terrible Part 1, the gang decide to watch the movie version of Dick Tracy.
Oh, no!
And in Something Terrible Part 2, they decide to watch Bonfire of the Vanities.
Oh, dear.
Other Brian De Palma films are available.
Yes.
If your guess is that someone does something terrible, that's a good guess.
Good.
But do they do it twice, or have they been doing it for an extended period of time?
Part one is going to be what the terrible thing was. Part two will be the Truth and Reconciliation Committee part.
You're good. Yep, you've got it. I won't ask you what you think the terrible thing is. I think you'll just find out.
All right.
What I will say is that when I'm watching random episodes of Press Gang for a laugh, I never watch these ones.
Ah, it must be something very terrible.
Well, the thing is, that could also mean that these are just crap episodes. Because there are some lightly naff episodes that I only watch when I'm watching the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I said about picking up the pieces. I never just watch picking up the pieces.
Yeah, yeah.
But if I'm watching Series 2, I watch it.
Mm-hmm.
Something Terrible Parts 1 and 2 are not casual watches for me.
Okay.
And I'll leave that with you.
Awesome. Yay.
All right, guys. Everyone out there, remember, no worries waiting for the call to feedback. Watch Something Terrible Part 1 on YouTube and let us know what you thought. lastwordpodcast@gmail.com. Write your words with fingers. Speak your words into some kind of recorder thing and send it to us, preferably compressed, please. MP3 is good. M4A is also good.
MP3, yeah, we don't want good. Any, you know, Og Vorbis or anything.
I can handle that as well. There were some, I've had some very unusual ones on the 11th Hour podcast. Really? Yeah, really curious. Like from older phones.
Like 3GP files?
3GP, even weirder. Like, because I've been doing that one since 2010.
True.
For a start. And before that, just really proprietary things for like Motorola phones. Stuff like that. Stuff that involved very specific converters.
That's really interesting.
Also, I once had one where someone sent in a voicemail and they were speaking next to an air conditioning unit that was as loud as they were, and I managed to tweak it out. By the way, I'm still working on your fan from the other week.
Awesome.
That I'm going to repost that episode. It's good.
That's great.
Awesome. I'm going to make it work. So yeah, lastwordpodcast@gmail.com. Let us know what you
Perfect.
Think. Just let us know if you like what we're doing. Certainly, if give us a line if you're one of the actual people who've watched Press Gang before and like what we're doing. And if you don't like what we're doing, that's cool. We won't change what we're doing, but it'd be interesting to know what you thought of it. And we've had that before. Some people have been like, you know, it's a bit long and off topic for me. And I'm like, yeah, we do do that. But if you skip through,
that's our style.
You do find that we do talk about Press Gang eventually. So eventually. No worries. I understand you don't like it. We won't change it for you, but that's cool.
No. Yeah.
And that's okay. Quite a snappy episode this week, actually, mate.
Agreed.
All right. And it's odd because it's one of the great ones. You think you could talk about it forever, but it's short and sweet. Lovely stuff. Mm-hmm. Spike and Linda, hot business. All right. And I nearly forgot about the very final thing that we normally do, finally, at the end of the episode, with finality. And that is, as you may recall, each time as I go on at length, while I give the music time to fade up in the background and reach the appropriate climax, which is also some finality in and of itself, I ask you, finally, to give us the last word. Not the last word, just the last word.
Haberdash.